This is the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, helping you run your restaurant better.
Welcome back to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. I know I say this often when I start these podcasts, but I do appreciate you guys coming on and hanging out with us. Today is a very, very, very special podcast because we are joined by a second time by co-authors who wrote a fantastic book that became a bestseller, and I'll let them introduce themselves, but the co-authors of Delivering the Digital Restaurant. And so Meredith, which is one of the co-authors, why don't you start and introduce yourself to those that forgot to listen to the last one? Maybe they should go back and listen to it. It was very, very popular the last time it came out, but why don't you introduce yourself to our audience, and then I'll let your co-author talk for just a minute.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, first of all, thanks for having us on a second time. I'm very excited to hear that we are one of the most popular downloads for your podcast. And hopefully this one will be too. So I'm Meredith Sandland, and I'm one of the co-authors of Delivering the Digital Restaurant. And guess what? There's now two Delivering the Digital Restaurants. We've got the first one, Delivering the Digital Restaurant, Your Roadmap to the Future of Food. And the second one, The Path to Digital Maturity. So we are excited about talking about those two things with you today, and as well as, you know, many themes that are in the book and some other stuff too. So prior to becoming an author, I was for many years in the restaurant industry with Taco Bell, where I was the chief development officer, and then with Kitchen United, where I was the COO. I am currently the CEO of a new software company in the restaurant space called Empower Delivery.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, I'll let your co-author talk here for just a second. And again, probably between both of you guys, it's I'm surprised that nobody, you know, that if there was even people out there that don't know of the first book or don't know of either one of you guys. But Carl, why don't you introduce yourself to our audience, tell them a little bit about yourself, and then we can dig into to the book and the first book a little bit for those that missed the last one, and then the second book.
Great stuff. Well, thanks for having us, Jeremy. Great to be back and glad to hear the first episode was so well received. My background is largely in C-stores, actually, convenience stores. I spent 15 years in that space, culminating in me running a 1,000-unit network over here on the West Coast by the name of AMPM. And really, it was there that I saw just the change in dynamics of how consumers were wanting even more convenience from their experiences, obviously in the retail context, but also in the context of any kind of vertical. And I think that has been clearly shaped by the e-commerce world that we now live in. I met Meredith at the ghost kitchen company, Kitchen United. So after I left the big world of BP, I went into a startup, and that startup experience was fantastic because for me to be able to see just the passion of individuals really driving towards an innovative concept that perhaps wasn't widely known about, certainly not here in the US, and be able to try and help an industry understand why it's so powerful was really, really compelling. And in fact, that's where the idea of the book came about. You know, the book was really an idea that Meredith and I spoke about when we were at Kitchen United, because we wanted to help the industry understand why off-premise, why digitization was going to be so powerful. And of course, when you're trying to sell a product, it's a little bit more difficult. So we thought maybe there's an impartial book out there that would help. And of course, there wasn't. So after we left Kitchen United, we ended up writing it. And we had to speed up that writing because the pandemic hit after the first few chapters that we had written. And it was really then where we just saw that this is a perfect time for this text to be out there. And it's gone on to become a big bestseller in a number of different countries. We've won a few awards from it and spoken at a number of different conferences as a result. But we missed something out. We missed something out from the first book, and that was, if the first book was the why, the second book was very much the how. And so we've really written more of a playbook this time, something so that restaurants can find their place on the roadmap to digital maturity. And it's really through that that we've decided that actually, if you can help restaurants really figure out where they are, then they can start to play a role in understanding what they can do to optimize their presence wherever they are on that digital maturity path. And then from that, then be able to figure out where to progress and how digitally mature they truly want to come. And we can dive into that more. Outside of writing books, I'm also the COO and co-founder of a dynamic pricing company for restaurants by the name of Juicer. We're helping restaurants optimize their profitability in the off-premise channel by using data-informed pricing.
I love it. I love it. And you're a podcast host yourself, I think. You and your co-founder of Juicer, I see you guys all the time. You know, you guys both I see your guys' face show up on my LinkedIn feed on a regular basis, which is why I alluded to the fact that people would have to be living under a rock to not see what you guys are putting out there, which is awesome. We talked a lot when the first book came out about just kind of the why. And I'd love to just get some quick feedback about what have you guys found as that book has gotten out there? Is that really the impetus behind the next book? Is people are like, oh, I get it, but now what? Is that really where it came from?
Yeah, I think that's right. The first book, we were so fortunate to be able to talk with over 100 industry executives in restaurants and technology, and they really talked with us a lot about what exactly was happening, who was doing what, where things were going, and why this was all occurring, which was fantastic. And I think it's really set a good framework to help restaurants think through, why is this important? Why do I need to focus on it? All of those types of things, which is great. But the follow-up question we always get is, okay, I believe, what should I be doing?
And yeah, where's my playbook? Help me, as Carl said. It's a playbook. The second book is more just pragmatic of, now you decided you're going to go to do third-party delivery. What are the things you need to be thinking about? How do you need to get there or whatnot?
Exactly. And that's a great first example, because I think almost every restaurant that made it through the pandemic signed up on at least one third-party delivery platform, if not multiple. But because most restaurants have this kind of love-hate relationship with the third parties, they do it in a way that I would say is begrudging some of them.
Yes.
And it's one of those things where if you're going to do it, you want to do it well. Otherwise, don't do it, right? Yep. And so we spend actually the first chapter of the book talking about what does it mean to do it well and how do you do it? How do you embrace these third-party platforms and really make the most of them, because they have a lot to offer restaurants. And I would say to any restaurant that's like, man, I don't know if I want it, then get them out of your restaurant. Mm-hmm. Either do it and go all in, or don't do it.
Well, and I think that that's an interesting concept, because one of the trains of thought as we're looking, and I want to talk about kind of how the book goes, and you alluded to third-party delivery, but I think a lot of people were reactive. You know, when you guys wrote the first book, you guys were trying to be proactive. And to your point, Carl, you guys were selling this idea of having a digital presence in your product offering. It was before the pandemic. And then everybody got forced into having to adopt something. To your point, Meredith, like if they got through it, they had to figure out how to operate in a world that they didn't create, because government shutdowns or you know, health concerns and all of these things. It's not the way they got into the business. And so they said, you know what? As a matter of survival, we're going to have to do things differently. But they did it in a very reactive way. And thus, I'm sure, I've seen from a lot of, even as a consumer, as well as in restaurant technology, a lot of people didn't design out their plan on how to do those things. Talk to me a little bit about that and kind of some of the findings. One, as to the last couple of years, you see people take these things on. And I guess, where are even some of the biggest mistakes that you guys are trying to help people prevent going forward, or the mistakes that they already know that they've made? Carl, why don't you start? And then if Meredith, you have anything that you want to add to it, that'd be awesome.
Sure. I think you're right. I mean, sometimes you could say it's mistakes. Sometimes it's a case of doing too much too early. Mm-hmm. And so there are, we haven't done this study, and I don't know how we'd even go about it, but I would have loved to be able to understand, if we were to chart the digital maturity path and to show a representation of a mix of how many restaurants at each step, we would probably argue, and we haven't talked about this, Meredith, so I'll see what you say in a second. I would probably argue that 70 to 80% of restaurants, especially independent restaurants, are probably in the first two chapters of the book, mm-hmm. right? So in many ways, we are doing a little bit of future talk here in what we're trying to share with folks. But it's also saying, don't go too far down that path until you're ready. So to what Meredith was talking about before, you know, embrace the third parties, because they do serve a role. They do serve a role. That was perhaps one of the contentious things from the first book, in the sense that they are an opportunity for you to find new customers. But then mm-hmm. as we progress through the book, we then start to say, customer data is so critical, improved profitability is so critical, and so having your own direct channel is so critical. But then we get into the space of, something we talked about on Nation's Restaurant News, which we contribute as writers for, and that is throttling. So there are certain restaurants out there that have figured this out, that are starting to get so many orders coming through that they then end up turning off the third parties, particularly on a busy Friday night, because they can't cope. The kitchen can't cope. And so this isn't necessarily a technology problem, Jeremy. This is actually something which is an operational challenge. Now you're getting so much through your kitchen. Is it how do you need to adjust your operation to find a better level of output capacity to be able to accommodate this new channel? And again, you think back to one of the chapters in our first book where we talk to drive-through. Imagine if a drive-through didn't have the necessary back-of-house changes designed into the operation. How would it be able to accommodate the level of volume it does today? It wouldn't. It would never have got to the size of sales mix that it has today. And so part of where we go in this whole journey is then saying, again, if you treat this seriously, if you're really about, you know, taking off-premise as a serious channel in your business, you also have to treat it properly in your operation and making sure that everything from the way in which you allow drivers to pick up your food to the way in which you manage the ability for you to churn through food through your offer at different times of day, all of these things are critical. And I think that is probably the key lesson that people will get from this book, is really understanding where you're at and what you need to focus on when.
I love that. I'm going to make a quick comment and then let Meredith comment. I always love to bring up those things I haven't talked to my wife about in public so that she can't yell at me right in front of the guests when I'm like, hey, I haven't talked to you about this, but we need to be going to this, because then it turns out better for me, I promise you, in the end. But Meredith, I guess, how would you add to that? Because I know on our first show, we talked even about my own experience. There's a brand that I won't go to because of that throttling problem. But I think, technology is oftentimes a solution to the problem, but it's not the end all be all. There's three or four operational challenges that I'd love to talk through that I think people need to consider. But back to the point, we threw this tech out there. We threw these operational opportunities out there without actually laying a blueprint to do it properly. Meredith, talk to me a little bit more about kind of some of the things that you've continued to hear and see that have come out of the first book, and a little bit to Carl's comments on kind of, you know, some of these early adopters, and then people that may still be laggards that still haven't kind of figured it out or are early in the journey.
Yeah, well, certainly this operational point is a huge one. And I think this is true both within the restaurant as well as above restaurant, that there's just so much innovation happening. We are at the very front end of this digital disruption. And what happens at the front end of innovation is you get a lot of different point solutions that, you know, talk to each other or not to greater or lesser extent. And each technology solution unveils, if you will, new problems that weren't even visible before. And so this throttling thing is a great example of that, right? Like before, we couldn't even talk to our consumers who were outside of our restaurant unless they called. Now they can place a digital order. Wow, it's so easy. And then we found out that they could place digital orders on 8 different platforms. And so we had to get aggregators. Wow, now we have a new technology that solves that problem. Bill, now that we have that, we have so many orders that our kitchen is flooded. And so we all start throttling, right? Like just one thing leads to another. And while that is, I guess, a good problem to have, it's tricky both within the restaurant as well as for the folks that are trying to make the decisions about which technologies they should embrace next and how they embrace them. So that has certainly been a big point of feedback or question is, gosh, do I really need all of this stuff? It feels like I have, you know, 15 or 20 different pieces of software to put all this together. And it's just led to a lot of complexity. And, I think if we were to step back and say, okay, well, what we've discovered is that there's a huge amount of demand for prepared food off-premise.
Yep.
If we were to start from scratch, how would we service that demand in the best way possible? At Yum, we called this future back thinking, right? We'd imagine what it would be like if you were to just start 20 years from now with the most ideal solution, and then you'd pull back to where you are today and then kind of build a bridge between the two. And I think if we were to describe what we think that future will be like, we would say, well, you know what? It's probably going to be a lot less complex.
Yes.
And that probably means maybe more specialized by channel instead of everyone trying to be everything to all people at all times. That probably means a more holistic technology solution rather than 20 different piecemeal things. That probably means that we will dramatically improve automation, which means that we're going to have much better, smarter software telling different parts of the restaurant what to do. And we'll probably have a lot more electrification in that kitchen, which will enable that automation the same way that we've seen in cars, right? Much easier to automate something that's electrified than something that's combustion. So a lot less complexity. And then I would argue that we will reinvest the savings from eliminating that complexity into the thing that the consumers care about, which is the quality of the food.
And the experience.
Yeah. Whether that experience is a wonderful dine-in situation or a fantastic, very convenient off-premise delivery. But I would argue that, you know, today with inflation and wage labor shortages and things like that, we're all struggling to give the consumer 30% of their dollar back in the form of food, which is kind of the industry average. I would argue in this future state, we're going to be giving consumers 40% of their dollar back in the form of food. And that sounds crazy and unattainable given the current environment. But I think if we apply technology in the right ways, we'll end up there.
Yeah. And I think that we can be significantly more efficient. I'm going to ask you guys both to riff real quick on something that there's really two things that I want to get through before we get done with our conversation, just because you guys live in this space. The first of which is the missed sales opportunities. Carl, you talked about the fact that they'll turn off their digital channel when they get too busy. This past spring, I was at a customer conference and we were talking about this whole idea of what's clogging up the kitchen, what's causing the deliveries to not get there. And most of the predictive analytics of when how long your food is going to take, and even quite frankly, when I walk into a restaurant and I'm going to get a table, like the girl is guessing. Technology can solve that, but half the time the girl or the guy that's at the host stand is just like, I don't know, it's about 45 minutes. And if I say 45 minutes, does that mean you leave? Or if I say 45 minutes, do you stay and wait? If I say 30 minutes, do you stay and wait? But we talk about that guest experience. And I think all too often that same thing happens. They're very linear math equations that say, if I have X amount of food in the kitchen, and the experience that I shared with you guys on my first episode, there's a brand I won't go back to because they didn't throttle the kitchen and I had three bad experiences in a row and now I choose not to go back. I think a lot of people have throttled it almost too far, and there are ways to get more food out of the kitchen, especially based on menu mix. And I think with the advent of AI and machine learning, there are capabilities to solve for that. Did you guys tackle that? Since I haven't gotten a chance to read the new book, have you guys tackled that? Is that something that you guys think is going to come in to allow the guests to understand? If I'm getting two Caesar salads, it's a 3-minute cook time, and I can probably slide that in before four well-done steaks are going to come through. And that might be able to get to a DoorDash driver or an Uber Eats driver or whatever else a lot faster than the steaks might. But right now, it's a very linear path. So Meredith, why don't you take that first, since I can see it in your face on the video that this is this is something that you're excited about. And I do think it's an opportunity for restaurants that they are missing out on way too often.
100%. Yeah, 100%. And, you know, Carl will talk through his example about different channels in a second, I'm sure. But this is exactly what Empower Delivery is meant to solve. So we use machine learning to be able to say, what are the various cook times? What are the various cook times under different situations? And then how do we sequence different orders to be able to maximize the kitchen throughput and to be able to optimize the consumer experience? And so the consumer is given a quote time when they place an order, and the software is accurate plus or minus 5 minutes, 97% of the time. Like, that's amazing. And when you receive the delivery, you're like, I can't believe that was even possible. But that's the kind of thing that technology can do. And when you think about that hostess, or that expo or whatever role in the kitchen it might be, who's at those various control points, you know, getting the seat, putting the food out, those types of things, they have an incredible amount of data in their heads of experience of how long these things take. And when you have a bad experience, like you're saying, where they say 30 minutes, but really it's an hour and a half, it's probably because the person's new And they don't have all of that data in their head to be able to reliably forecast out the amount of time. Well, guess what? Computers, not new, right? Yeah. They are consistent day to day, same every time. Once they have that installed base of knowledge, it's always there, no matter if someone doesn't show up for a shift or not. And so they can use that information to forecast out when the peak demand times are going to be, when an item or a specific order is going to be able to drop into the kitchen, when a table will become available. All of that kind of stuff becomes totally forecastable and totally accurate, and we'll be able to share back with the consumer.
Well, and I think before you riff on that for just a second, Carl, I think the one thing that that I heard you talk about, and I think it continues to, I was talking to our CTO at, you know, at CBS recently, and I was asking, I said, the advent, because we were just at NRF a couple of weeks ago, and we were just talking about the advent of the amount of AI and machine learning that's out there. The models 20 years ago would take somebody, you know, take somebody weeks, if not years, in a room to go build those models.
Totally.
You know, we're at like the inception of this, you know, ChatGPT. It's like the hottest thing in the world right now because this, you know, it's able to scour these things. I think these models continue to get built to help, where the more data you feed it, the smarter they get. I can imagine a day when 97 is going to become 98, it's going to become 99, and it's going to become five nines at some point as far as the order accuracy and the timing, especially as we digitize the kitchen and start to understand that, you know, that those things are going to happen. So Carl, talk to me a little bit about your experience and both with brand, on the brand side, and even maybe even as a consumer.
Yeah, I love this whole conversation. I think we could go in so many different directions on it. Let's start with the consumer experience, right? So what's a lot of folks often will say, I need to get off third parties and get customers using my first party channel because it's a better profitability for my business. And they're right, of course. But what it is also doing is it's giving you access to data. It's giving you access to customer data and that ability for you to be able to service their need ongoing. And I think, first of all, restaurants need to realize that customers are going to come to your restaurant through numerous different channels. Sometimes they'll dine in for a family visit on a Saturday lunchtime. Other times it will be a Tuesday night when they've got home from work late. Therefore, being able to build an understanding of who your customer is and the ways they want to engage with your restaurant is so critical. Now, think about the best server experience you've ever had, Jeremy. You know, when you think about that, typically the server has asked about what your need state is. They've asked whether you're in a rush, whether you're here for the evening. Perhaps they remember you from last time, so they remember your favorite bottle of wine or what your dietary preferences are for your guest. Those types of things are what the best servers out there give in a dining experience. But of course, we can't all have the best server working across all shifts, and we can't necessarily always have that level of capability existing. But in a customer data orientated world, where you increasingly allow your channels of service to be digitized, that level of service can be matched every single time. And I think that is the exciting future that sits ahead for ourselves, the ability to give that same type of experience, whether it be menu preferences, dietary preferences, whether it be asking the guest what they're actually looking for in terms of their needs at that time. I want something quick, or I actually want to enjoy something that I've had before. It's almost the equivalent of what Amazon gives us. Right. Yeah. It's the fact that your Amazon screen is different to my Amazon home screen, because they know what we like, they know what we've purchased before, and they're able to adjust that experience as a result. So I think as we broaden that horizon a little bit, what we're going to get towards is a place where restaurants are going to become these giant data warehouses. And one of the less sexy aspects of technology is, you know, the bandwidth available at each restaurant to process all of these different forms of data flows that are happening, whether that be on the consumer ordering end or whether that be in the cost of product end back in the kitchen. And then I think, you know, when we explore a little bit of this in our new book, The Path to Digital Maturity, we start to say, well, how can these data sets actually become something that can work together more seamlessly? So rather than just an API interface that allows one particular technology to work alongside another, how can we create a two-way symbiotic relationship And the way I would frame that for you, just to give you some context as to what I mean, is imagine tonight on the employee scheduling or the record of when someone has clocked in for the evening, two of your cooks have called out. Now, what happens in that environment as a restaurant manager? In that moment, you're having to make decisions about how you're going to operate that particular location that evening. So what if technology could help that restaurant manager? What if it could say, well, guess what? Now, as a result of that, we're going to actually limit Open Table or Resy's ability to have this amount of table service tonight because the kitchen won't be able to have a certain amount of throughput. What if they reach out to the technology works with Juicer? So that way the prices are actually elevated a little bit to stem the off-premise demand in some way.
Or you could imagine a digital menu and I reduce the complex menu items because I don't have the cooks to be able to produce it is another thing that I can think of.
Totally right. Yeah. Can you imagine the different ways that all of this could work together? But that is the holistic technology future that we need to work towards. And that's not on just the restaurants. That's on the technology players out there to really solve for. And I think that's a case that we make really towards the end of this next book to be able to say that is where restaurants are really going to be able to reach their zenith when we're able to allow all of this functionality to work together well. And of course, coming back to that data handling piece, to allow the data to work in one fashion as opposed to having transactional data and, you know, seven different forecasts being built by seven different algorithms. Because that will potentially lead to the wrong and most optimized output.
Well, and I think Meredith talked about it earlier. I think that the operators end up, they can't consume the amount of change. They can't consume the amount of data. So we have to serve it to them in ways that's digestible. I know we're getting closer to our time, but I want to ask you guys, because one of the other challenges that I continue to hear from our restaurant operators, and I have my own theory, but I'd love to hear what your guys' thoughts are on it first. As more and more product has been going out the doors digitally in a clamshell or in a box out to guest recovery and food quality and food accuracy is a significant issue. I was talking to a CEO recently and he said 60% of his complaints come from the wrong product going out the door. I asked for no guacamole on my taco. I got guacamole on my taco. I'm upset. And now guest recovery is impossible. Talk to me a little bit about let's just beat the cooks harder. Let's just make sure that they're doing it properly. That's, you know, and obviously I say it in jest, but you guys hear this problem, I'm sure. They're busier than they were. The staffing is lower than it probably should be because of the labor challenges you guys alluded to earlier. Talk to me a little bit about the digital evolution, because I don't think we're at a place today. My theory is I don't think we're at a place today where everybody's going to adopt Flippy and everything's going to get produced by robots. I think there's still going to be a human aspect in restaurants for a significant amount of time, if not forever, to be able to produce that food. And it's still an opportunity because so much of it, a brand that I just talked to last week said 60% of their orders go out the door. 60%, 61% actually, he said. I was like, okay, so 61%, how do you make sure that it's right? And so talk to me a little bit about your guys' theory on kind of that digital evolution and where is it going to go? Where's it at now and where is it going to go?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's two issues here. I'll talk about the first one and then hand it off to Carl to talk about the second one.
You better tell me what the second issue is.
Yeah, I know. I will.
I'll do it up for you to make sure that you can get it properly.
We've spent a lot of time together, but I know that you can't read my mind. So the first issue, I think, is, you know, how do you minimize the number of mistakes that get made? Mm-hmm. And then the second issue is, as you said, mistakes are inevitable. They do happen. How do you fix them? And of course, that is much harder in an off-premise context than it is on-prem. So to the first issue, how do you minimize mistakes? I think here is where technology can really help us. And yes, even if technology is augmenting our human workers, mm-hmm. if it does it in a way that makes things easier, then there should be fewer mistakes. So by that, I mean things like telling a worker exactly what they need to know when they need to know it, rather than expecting them to, you know, keep a whole bunch of things in their buffer, so to speak, and having to access the right bit of information at the right time. That's hard when you're in a high pressure situation. I don't care who you are, how experienced you are, how good you are at what you do. If you're trying to keep track of a lot of different things at once in a fast-paced environment, you're going to make mistakes. And technology can absolutely help us focus in that way. And the second is minimizing what I would call like minimal manual handoffs. So if you're, you know, rekeying anything manually, there's going to be translation errors, right? It's like playing a game of telephone when you're kids. And if one piece of technology says my order is blah, 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 blah with these modifications. And then I take that as a human and rekey it into another system. Mistakes will happen. Even if I'm like scraping email with some kind of technology and having the software rekey it, mistakes will happen, right? So the more that we can get to what Carl described as that two-way API connection, the better we're going to be, because that kind of data will flow automatically and that will reduce errors. So that would be my first part, reducing errors. And then Carl, I'll hand it off to you about fixing them.
Yeah, it's not easy, right? It's not easy. And I think this is compounded also by the chargeback challenges that a lot of restaurants are facing, right? In the sense that a lot are finding that items that, you know, you might have missed off a drink from the order, but the whole order is refunded. And so the restaurant loses out. And unless they've got some tracking mechanism in place, they're really unable to necessarily contest that chargeback. So I think what Meredith said there was right, but fixing the errors, I think it comes back a little bit, to what I was saying earlier about drive-through and just thinking about the operation and the way in which a drive-through operation, how many errors do you have on accuracy there? Typically not as many as you'd probably find today in the delivery setup. So why is that? What are the best practices we can learn from there? Well, you know, a lot of the top QSRs will use triple checks. Okay, so through the expediting process, they will have a triple check process. They will have a chit on the side of the bag of where someone will sign it off. Sometimes, just from a digital hospitality standpoint, you actually get the expediter themselves to say, you know, delicately packed by, you know, Janice or whatever, right? And they sign their name as a note of pride, if you will. All of these things are different ways to be able to try and support it. Because as soon as that package leaves your restaurant, it's too late. One of the things that I would encourage folks to think about is making sure that as part of your opportunity to convert customers to third party is actually encouraging your guests to leave a review. So that way, you know, look at the platforms like Ovation, Yumpingo, Tattle, all of those out there that allow you to get the guest sentiment. So that way you hear from them directly without them putting a negative experience out onto Google or onto Yelp or onto the, you know, the DoorDash and Uber Eats of this world. That's really important, because then you've got their contact information. Then you can at least try and restore that customer back by probably having to give away some decent level of offer. But guest recovery is really difficult in a third party transaction, because you just don't know who they are. So you've got to be able to have the opportunity to connect with the customer, but it's probably more about more check-in and not treating an off-premise order fulfillment the same way as you'd treat an on-premise one.
Well, and as I tell the story of my bad experience, I've had multiple people say, yeah, I won't order from XYZ brand because of exactly that point, because I didn't get the right food. I'm going to throw something at you guys that's a little bit of a curveball, but I'm digging pretty deep into it, because I've now had at least one person on the podcast and two more that have been talking about it, is the whole computer vision idea. And so there's new software that's coming out related to computer vision that's going to see that there's guacamole on that taco that wasn't supposed to be there, coming from the data from the KDS. And so we are working with some different providers to try and solve that challenge, because it's one of the larger challenges that I've heard from some of the CEOs and COOs that we've been working with. And so I'll throw that at you guys. I know the book's in print, and maybe it'll have to be an addendum, or you guys can talk about it on social. But it is kind of cool that I think that computers, back to your point, Meredith, the more they understand the model, the more they're going to recognize that burger is supposed to have bacon on it and it doesn't have bacon on it. Why does it not? And now, no different than the Toyota plant that's got QA checking and QC checking as things 100%. Are going through, it's going to stop that order before it hits the guest.
Yeah. And I love this. And I think computer vision is one of these really exciting areas. And great news, there's always going to be continual innovation. So we can write a book 3 and a book 4. But What I love about it is not necessarily that it's like a totally new idea that nobody has ever used anywhere. It's that finally the cost of compute has gotten so low that we can put this type of technology in a restaurant setting, right? So, you know, probably car manufacturing, they've been using things like this forever because they're doing these big, huge plants that put out really expensive cars, and therefore putting more expensive technology in place to help them, reduce their defects makes a ton of sense. But restaurants, you know, if you were running $1.5 million restaurant in the old days, being able to afford the technology to put in there to have a computer tell you whether or not you put the guacamole on. That math does not check out, right? And what's happened in the last 10 years between SaaS and cloud computing and all, like, the cost of compute has just come down so far that we can all now kind of share the cost to do these really advanced things. And computer vision is a great example of that. So same thing actually with voice AI, being able to recognize what people are saying. And you can imagine tying that together so that, you know, you actually have a computer hear what the customer is asking for and match that to what the computer sees. Is that being, and you still might have a human in there doing all kinds of things terms of customer service and putting the burger together and all the things that humans do so well, but the computer on each end can make sure that accuracy is there. It's very exciting.
Yeah. Well, I just got back from NRF and you know, it's mostly grocery and retail, and it was amazing. You know, produce recognition and self checkout. You know, the one of the stickiest points at grocery is when you go up and they have to go look up the product SKU for a head of lettuce or a tomato. You know, and to your point, Meredith, the people that have been around for a long time remember that tomatoes are XYZ, you know, SKU number. But oftentimes when you get a new cashier, they're looking through the book to figure out what is the organic tomato number versus what is the, and now they've got computers that are recognizing that that's a head of romaine lettuce and it rings up a head of romaine lettuce automatically. I know Amazon's been doing a ton with that as well. And so I'm super excited to get a copy of the book because I think it's going to be remarkable to watch how people finally are at a place where, you know, as you said, Carl, they're in stage one or stage two of this journey and there is so much to go. I'm going to ask you guys, I guess, if they're looking to figure out, I know we've got to wrap here in just a second. If they've got to go figure out how, if they have done nothing right now, do you tell them go get the first book so that they can get sold on it? Do you tell them just jump to book two, get both books? Talk to me a little bit about, you know, if I'm a restaurateur and I know nothing and I've got salespeople walking in my door every day saying, you got to get this, you got to get this, you got to get this, you got to get this. Talk to me a little bit about that journey and how you would say that they should go.
Yeah, I think, for sure they should get both books. That would make sense. But I think there's value of just visiting our website as well to look at some of the blog articles that we've put out there, look at the podcast that we've been on. I mean, obviously your podcast is a great place to find great information from other leaders out there, but also, you know, the podcasts that we've been on are great sources of information. So you have to embrace the information that's out there, the different opinions that are out there, and hear from the stories of folks that are doing it. You know, I am on our podcast, the Monday Minute, or it's now being called the Digital Restaurant, but we're going to rebrand it in February, but we've got our next episode coming out pretty soon, and I'm going to talk about Andrew Simmons, who's actually the president of the RMDA, but he has his own tech journey that he's talking through live on his, I think, Pizza TV website, and helping restaurants understand what it takes to be able to bring on these new forms of technology and some of the challenges that exist on that way, and some of the successes he's been able to achieve. I think it's really trying to be close to the knowledge sources of people doing things like that, because I think together we'll be able to really make sure that we've got a clear understanding of how to optimize our presence. No one person's got the right answer. Yep. So I think humility is really important in it, but also just being aware and cognizant that it is a marathon, it's not a sprint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in the meantime, as Carl said, buy both books. So we'll have them both available on Amazon here in the next couple of weeks. And if you prefer to shop direct first party, you can come to our website, which is deliveringthedigitalrestaurant.com, and find both the books there.
I love it. So, and you guys, our audience hears me say this often, technology for technology's sake is not going to solve the world's problems. And just because your competitor or just because somebody else in the restaurant space has implemented a piece of technology doesn't necessarily mean it matches your brand, doesn't necessarily mean that it matches something that you need. So evaluate those things. You know, experience is great, but evaluated experience is even better. So evaluate those experiences, figure out what it is that you're looking for, get connected with these two guys online, follow what they're doing. Obviously, if you're listening to this show, then you're a learner, because you're out there wanting to learn more about what's happening. So thank you guys for not only being on the show twice, for writing both books, because I know that they've helped tens of thousands of restaurants around the world to really become the to really understand what's around the corner and how they can impact the future of restaurants. Because I myself have spent my entire life going out to eat and servicing this industry. And so I love the fact that you guys are doing everything that you guys can from a servant's heart perspective to help people. And it's only going to cost them a little bit of money to buy the book. So go figure out how to pick up both.
Thanks so much. Well,
and to our audience, guys, we know that you guys have got lots of opportunities out there. So thank you guys for listening. If you haven't already checked us out and subscribed to the newsletter, please do so. One click, one email a month, no spam, no anything else. To our guests today, Carl and Meredith, thank you guys. I can't wait to see you guys at the next show at some point coming up here soon, and as well as getting a copy of the second book so that I can read through and probably learn some new stuff.
It's on its way.
Wonderful. Thank you guys. Have a great one.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Visit restauranttechnologyguys.com for tips, industry insights, and more to help you run your restaurant better.